enterprising in my surroundings. I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing. Amazed that the focus remains the focal point of my change.
Hello and welcome to the Rambling Runner Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Chittum, and this is the podcast for all the dedicated amateur runners out there who are working hard to get better while balancing running with the rest of their lives. Before we get into my CIM recap and review, which I'm really excited about, I'm amazed how many people want to hear about this. And amazed is not hyperbole. I am legitimately amazed, but I'm also really excited to give it to you. Lots to learn from in this training cycle and from this race in particular. And I can't wait to share that. Before I do, big shout out to my favorite recovery company, Brio. It is the gift giving season. Give yourself or your loved ones the gift of Brio, whether that is the tiny mini massage gun, which is absolutely fantastic, I should say. It may be small, but it is mighty. It packs a punch and it really does help with recovery. I can't say that enough. And I'm living that right now because my legs are feeling good. First marathon in over a decade and 5 days out, 6 days out right now. And I'm feeling good. My legs really are. And I'm excited to get back into training. Also, I cannot talk about Brio without talking about the foot massager. It is heaven on earth. If you don't believe me, give it a try. You can always return it if you don't like it, but spoiler alert, you're not going to. In fact, you're going to hoard it. You will become a hoarder with this object. I've no doubts. It's just the best. So go to us.brio.com/ramblingrunner to save 20% on your order today. That's B-R-E-O. So us.brio.com/ramblingrunner. Now, the California International Marathon, which I ran last Sunday. So many of you have heard about this race because it's a place where people, generally speaking, run very, very well. Now, not only is that because it's such a well-run course, the temperature is generally perfect as it was on race day, and we'll talk about that as well. But also, it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Once you kind of get the reputation of being a course that people run well on, well, then people start flocking to a course like that or a race like that when they have a time to hit that they're really excited about, whether it be a BQ or a sub 3 or an OTQ or name a goal. And people say, I want to go to the California International Marathon to get it. And simply by doing that, it also increases the chances that that race gets known as a place like that, as opposed to, hey, this is my local marathon and, I don't want to travel for a race, so I'm going to choose this race. And that's another perfectly legitimate reason to choose a race. But at this point, CIM is now in this virtuous cycle of people hitting great times and then more people going there to hit great times. And when you're focused like that and your training is going like that and you go there with that intention, there's a pretty good chance you're going to hit it. So here we are, California International Marathon, the place where dreams are made. That's not their motto or whatever, but CIM, hit me up, royalties, baby. So let's get into it. There's a couple things that I'm going to address here. In my last episode with Rachel Gersten, we talked about, amongst many things, how to evaluate a big race performance and also a big training cycle. Go back and listen to that episode. It was fantastic. By that, I mean, she is fantastic. There's no question about that. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about things that I couldn't control going into the race, but that had an impact on the race. Things that went well and things that maybe didn't go well and, things that we can learn from. So some of the things that had an impact that I could not control, and all of these are going to be positive because it was just fantastic. First thing, being on East Coast time, that was a huge benefit for me because the race started at 7 a.m. The buses that left to go to the starting line, which were incredibly well managed. I'll just say this before I get into that. The organization of the California National Marathon, unbelievable. It truly is remarkable how these people have really dialed it in. It's just, they've thought of everything. And it's so well done. So if you want to go to a race that you feel like you can just put your mind on autopilot and really make as few decisions as possible heading into race day, I can't think of a better place. This is just so, so impressive. So, what was I saying? Yes, being on East Coast time, huge benefit because, you know, you have to hit the bus by 5, which means you're waking up at latest 4 o'clock to get your pre, you know, your pre-race and morning of stuff done, whether that's, you know, getting your kit on, getting nutrition down your gullet for breakfast, you know, going to the bathroom, which is the most important thing before a marathon. I'm not talking about number one when I say that. But being on East Coast time really helped because waking up at 4 o'clock on the West Coast time was really like waking up at 7 o'clock on the East Coast time, which for me is sleeping in and sleeping in big time. So that was a wonderful, nice thing that while I couldn't control it, I certainly benefited from it. There's no question about that. The energy all weekend long. Wow. Being just the people around this race are just so excited. And I think it's part and parcel with what we talked about before, with it being a goal race for so many people. People are just amped. Everyone was in a good mood. The energy around the weekend at the expo, at the race, on the bus, before the race, during the race, it was so impressive and uplifting and just genuinely a great thing to be a part of. Alongside of that is just the people. I said this in 2018. It was one of the highlights of my career, was going to CIM in 2018 because the people there, it was like a family reunion, and I really felt that. Now, it's a little different now because of COVID restrictions. You don't quite get that exact same connectivity. With that said, compared to general life experience over the last 18 months, it was remarkable, remarkable. The connectivity you get, the energy you get from other people, and it was just so amazing. And this goes all the way through. Not only at the expo, and which people are genuinely, you know, generally going to be really excited about, even on the race course, you have a point-to-point race course. It can be hard to have fans all the way through. And I wouldn't say that this wasn't like Boston in that sense, but there were a ton of fans along the race course. It was really uplifting. The runners themselves, kudos to all of you who ran CIM. I had so many wonderful and engaging moments with other people racing that day. It was just awesome. It was so awesome. And then finally, the weather. For me, personally, excuse me. That's what happens when you record these things first thing in the morning. We're going to keep that in. Dave, keep that in. When you record these first thing in the morning and you haven't really talked, sometimes the vocal processing leaves a little bit to be desired. Anyway, here we are. The weather. For me personally, it could not have been better. Okay? I am, you know, a freckled gentleman with very pale skin. Warm weather and sun does not do a body good in my case. So having the weather that we had was quite literally ideal. Okay? It was high 30s, low 40s at the start. It was cloudy throughout. It was, you know, kind of like late 40s, maybe hit 50 by the time the race ended. And it was a little misty at certain points. It was exactly what my body needed. If you had asked me to diagram the weather for that day, I would have done exactly what we got. There wouldn't have been any deviation. It was absolutely perfect. And how often can you say that, especially about something that you can't control? It was as good as it gets, which was awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, I'm going to go into the positives. I want to end on the negatives because that also lead into things that I want, things that I'm thinking about in terms of the next marathon build and wherever that's going to be. I will answer that question shortly. But I want to do the positives, end on the negative, because also the things that I want to improve upon. And that's a great kind of lead in to the next goal and things of that nature. So huge positive. Nutrition. Nutrition went great. I talked about this on the preview. I think my lifetime addiction to sweets helps me so much with eating gels and all the typical marathon race fare, no GI issues. I was pounding goos the whole time. I brought, I think, 6 or 7, and they had plenty on the course. They had every mile and a half to 2 miles, they had a water stop and basically the beverage stop. So there was water and there was noon every mile and a half to 2 miles. And then every 6 miles, they had Goo, which was the one of the official sponsors of the race. And that's the brand that I typically use. So that worked out really well. So I was grabbing Goos by the handful. I had a bunch of Goos on me, on my little waist belt, which was normally I put my phone in. Instead, I did the phone and the armband. And I used my waist belt for just Goo. And that was a great combination for my from a holding thing perspective, right? So I was holding a couple different things. It worked out great for lugging it around. Wasn't the most stylish move ever. The thing about belts, I think they fit me well and they work well. They don't make the race photos look great, but you know what? That's going to be the least of my concerns. So the nutrition went very well. That's for sure. I don't know about you. I can't run and drink out of the cups. I just can't. Okay, I try. Maybe I need to practice this more. Maybe this needs to be part of my practice routine going into the next marathon. But basically, like, if I really want to drink what I'm holding, I need to walk. It's what I have to do. Again, it doesn't really affect my pace because we're talking about maybe 10 seconds of walking. And it's not like I'm not standing still, right? I'm walking for 10 seconds. So what does that mean from a pacing perspective? Is that maybe it's a 4 second decrease in the average per mile. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to help my pace because I'm getting the nutrition I need. So ultimately, I would argue that it makes me faster because I'm ensuring that I'm going to get the nutrition I need. Some people carry bottles with them. And that was one of the questions or decisions that I had to use. At Richmond, I noticed that I just really couldn't drink and run at the same time. And at the Richmond half, I mean. So I thinking going into this race, like, should I bring a water bottle? Because I know this about myself, and there's going to be twice as many water stops at the marathon than the half marathon. So I'm going to think about that moving forward. Still a question to be raised. But overall, nutrition was great. Effort and grit. Well, before I get into that, let me just tell you about the pacing of the marathon and how that went. My marathon pace going into this, generally speaking, was probably 8:20, in the 8:20s or so. Okay, but the fact of the matter was, and this is what I touched on many times in the preview, is that I basically wasn't strong enough to run a marathon at marathon pace the whole way, no matter what marathon pace I chose. I just didn't have the miles, okay? It was a truncated buildup. August was basically no running as well. So even if, like, the buildup went perfect starting in July, it still would have been a tight window. But I basically went 5 weeks without any serious running at all. I was able to stay fit because I was hopping on the bike, but I just wasn't putting in the miles. And my body needed that so bad because my lifetime fitness of running longer miles and doing long runs wasn't there. That was the most important thing that I needed, and it was the one thing that I couldn't do for a long time. So I had that last-minute push, 6 weeks of two-hour runs every single weekend, which was great. But 6 weeks is not what makes a marathoner. It's a much longer timeline than that. So ultimately, and I had an inkling that this was going to be the case, but you know, you want to stay positive. You want to be confident, because if you don't, well, then it's definitely not going to go well. So I didn't perfectly say this during the recap, but I kind of hinted at it that, like, there was a very, very small chance that I was going to be able to hold any marathon pace the whole way. And we'll touch on that in the steps moving forward. So basically from mile one, and I'm looking at my splits as I'm saying this, basically from mile one to mile 14, there was no deviation. Okay. So there was some ups and downs in the road, and I took those on effort. But ultimately I was averaging around the 8:20s the whole way. So that was great. Again, I did pick up the pace a little bit, on downhill sections and, you know, dialed it back a little bit on the uphill sections. The course is a rolling course. It is a net downhill, but there's also over 600 feet of elevation gain. It doesn't feel like a downhill course when you're running it. Just doesn't, right? The start is downhill, but then once you pass that point, it just feels like a slightly rolling course the whole way. And then the last 5 miles are relatively flat. That's how it feels. I really enjoyed that kind of course. I think having the rolling hills is nice. It allows your body to work in different ways and focus on different muscle groups. So I was able to stay in the 8:20s, high teens, and low 30s range, basically 15-second range the whole way for the first 15 miles or so. From a stats perspective, my heart rate, and I have the Vertex 2 by Coros, which I think does a really good job of managing heart rate, or measuring heart rate, I should say. Watches, I think, have taken a big leap in the last 18 months with heart rate monitoring if you wear them the right way. Okay, means you have to put them a little bit higher on the arm, an inch to inch and a half or 2 inches above the bone that sticks out of your wrist, and really kind of lock it down there. If you do that, I think they do a pretty good job measuring heart rate. I really do. Especially if you average it out as opposed to like, all right, I have a 1 minute segment here. What was my heart rate? Maybe it doesn't hit that perfectly, but over the long run, I think it really nails it. So heart rate was in the low 160s, hit a couple mid 160s a few times, but generally speaking, after the first mile, you know, when you're kind of get it going, really low 160s for me, which was about right. Cadence nailed it. 180. 178 to 182, that whole section, which was really good. Mile 15 started to wane. That's when it was a little tougher, for sure. Legs starting to get heavy, but it wasn't at the point where I thought, like, okay, this is where the wheels come off. You definitely go through those periods of like, okay, this is harder. However, I can come back from this. This is also roughly when, you know, the nutrition is important. I was making sure that I was fueling and doing all of those things. But at that point, I didn't necessarily think that the end was near in terms of holding marathon pace. That ended up being the case. However, I was still optimistic at that point. But then once mile 17 hit, 17 and 18, so 15 and 16, I was around 850. So it was 846 and then 850. 852. I was looking at the gap paces there for a second. Sorry. 852 and then 855 for 15 and 16. Then 17 and 18 were another set of pairs, 943 and 940. So a minute, 50 seconds slower than the previous miles. So that's when things really started to change for me. So my heart rate then dipped into the 150s. It would stay there or get lower for the rest of the race. Basically, this is when my legs kind of, I wanted to say betray me. That's not true because they did great. This was where my lack of long runs really started to have an impact. Okay. My quads, they weren't cramping. They were seizing up a little bit. They had run out of gas. They had put in all that they could muster. And at this point, the quads were just a no-go. And that's just the way it went. There was no going back from it. Again, this wasn't a cramping issue where nutrition was going to solve the problem. I would never again, even after, so these miles were 943 and 940, 17, 18. At mile 19, I was in the 10s and I would never be in the 9s again. So it was in the 10s, then it was in the 11s, and then it was in the 13s, and then I hit the 14s because I wasn't running anymore the whole way. I was doing a walk, run, shuffle. Over the last few miles, I was doing one of those, especially coming into town in Sacramento over the last couple miles. You get that countdown from like, it's numbered streets and you have like the 70s and the 60s and the 50s. And I knew that mile 22, that street 22 was 1 mile to go. So you're kind of counting down. And ultimately what had to happen for me was the legs just weren't there. My heart rate was fine. My breathing was fine. The last few miles, my heart rate was in the 130s, right? I mean, from mile 20 on, I wasn't even in the 150s. I was in the 148, 142, 140, 138, 132, 135 on the way to the finish line. So it was all about leg strength or lack thereof. The last couple miles, I went into like a, you know, shuffle two blocks, walk one block type scenario. You know, the walking was trying to, you know, move it a little bit. It wasn't a complete leisurely stroll, but I was hurting. I was hurting. And this goes into the next positive, effort level and grit. I couldn't control what was happening to my legs, but I could control how I was dealing with it. And the fact of the matter was, I was working hard all the way through. And it was harkening back to my Hartford Marathon 12 years ago now, where I basically like slumped over on the side of the road and was like, I can't do this. And I did not have that experience. Okay. I kept my effort level high. I kept the grit going. Okay. What can I do to make the best of this situation? And that's what I'm going to focus on. I was constantly strategizing to maximize this experience in this situation, which I'm really proud of. I'm not going to lie. I was, I'll talk about that in luck. I'll talk about the negatives. It wasn't all roses from the mental standpoint during this issue, during the situation, but I was able to focus on what can I control, how can I get through this, and how can I make this current situation the best it can possibly be without dwelling too much or making the dwelling on that part affect what was happening in the moment. So that can be a hard thing, and I was able to do it. So while I wasn't too happy with what was happening, it didn't affect the fact that I was able to make the best of that situation as it was happening. Okay. I will say I was really happy with my marathon pace miles. So for 15 miles, I did hold marathon pace. I did hold marathon effort. I thought it went really well. I didn't overthink it. I just kind of went and it was enjoyable. It was a fun experience. I had a great mindset during that time. I was jovial. I was joking with other runners. I had some people who recognized me on the course. I recognized other people on the course. And I just had a wonderful, wonderful experience. It was like just doing a long run with a really good group of people. And I really enjoyed it. I had a weird moment where I caught up to Amelia Benton, who was doing a marathon workout. And so she was doing 4x4 miles with like a 1 mile or 2 minute like rest between each segment. And if you don't know Amelia Benton, she's been on this show before. She's one of the best freelance writing voices for running in the country. She's absolutely fantastic. And I've certainly seen her byline in a variety of places. I caught up to her at one point, and I'm like, I knew that she was doing a workout. And so I caught up to her. I'm like, oh, how you doing? Is this one of your rest periods for your marathon workout? And she goes, not yet. I was like, uh-oh. And she had heard, Amelia, if you listen to this, she told me she had heard my race preview. And she looks at me askant and was kind of like, you should not be catching up to me. I know what your pace, I know the pace that you said you were going to run. So her withering look said all I needed to. And she did it with love because she was correct. So I did dial it back a little bit, thinking like, I should not be catching up to Amelia Benton. That is not what my marathon pace is. So I did dial it back a little bit there. Good thing. And yeah, you live and learn. I was trying to make sure I wasn't being too watch dependent, which I think generally was a positive. But it was nice to occasionally check in just to make sure that I wasn't going too far afield with what I was doing. And it was just nice catching up with her for a little bit because she is awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Let's see here. I'm just checking over my notes, make sure I got a couple of things. All right, yeah. And then finally, I did have some moments from a mental standpoint that were not ideal. But generally speaking, I didn't have a huge mental dip during the race when the wheels completely fell off. There are things that I could have done better, and I'll touch on that. But ultimately, I wasn't down in the dumps for like the last hour of the race, which, you know, wasn't completely out of the realm of possibility. Because when you publish a lot of stuff about your running and you make things personal, which I do, right? I try to share as much as I can with everybody about how things are going. And you know, you coach other runners who have huge marathon goals. It can feel a little funny to like have things not go great and then know that you're going to talk about it. With a lot of people. But ultimately, I didn't dwell on that too much. So that was a positive. Okay, we're going to do a quick ad break and then we're going to get back to it. Okay, so let's talk about the negatives, the challenges, and what I can learn from those. Okay, so talked about the truncated marathon buildup. Once I decided to run the race after CIM said, hey, love to have you back to do the expo, I said, let's do it. And this time I'm going to run. From that moment on, I didn't have a lot of time. Throw the injury in there, makes it even worse. Almost scrapped the idea of running altogether. But in September, we were able to heal it up and make it happen. So a lot of that I could not control, right? Once the decision had been made, some of the stuff I couldn't control. One thing I could control, though, there was a long run that I cut. And I didn't talk a lot about this. It was supposed to be a 20-miler. I cut it around 16 and a half or so. I was basically walking at that point. Okay. I was roasted. I was absolutely roasted. Actually, it was the same day that I recorded an episode of For the Long Run with Jonathan Levitt that just came out last Friday. So if you haven't listened to that, you should. I love John. He's a great guy. We had a really fun conversation. I recorded that episode with John at noon on that day. That Friday. and Friday is my long run day. And I was out there. I was approaching the 3 hour mark of this run. At this point, I was walking. My legs, my body, it's in a really bad spot. I fought through a couple down periods, and at this point, it was over, right? There was going to be no more running. And it was just simply like, okay, am I just going to like power hike, power walk the last 3.5 miles, which was going to take me roughly another hour? Or am I just going to be like, listen, I have work stuff I need to do today. I don't want to be out here for 4 hours, walking an hour, and then pushing my interview with John, who, you know, graciously fits me into his work schedule. It was just from a time crunch perspective, it's something that I learned of like, okay, on these long run days, maybe don't schedule so tightly with things, especially things with other people, so that if things don't go well, you can, you know, give yourself some wiggle room. Learned that. Also learned I shouldn't have cut that run. Okay. I shouldn't have. I should have been out there. I should have just done the full 20 miles, even if I was out there for a long time, because I needed that exposure and I didn't get it. Would it have changed everything for this race? Of course not. But it would have helped. It would have helped. So maybe I could have gone 10 or 15 more minutes, or maybe at marathon pace, or maybe it would have allowed for a longer shuffle period as opposed to going to the walk run. I don't know. But I do know I did cut that run. At the time, it did feel like I didn't really have much of a choice because I had these other obligations and I didn't want to be out there for another hour and all of that stuff. But looking back on it, I should have scheduled my day differently to allow myself the time to make that happen, which is just, that's life. That's just part of being a dedicated amateur runner. We don't have all day. Even for me, who is his own boss and has, can set up his day however he wants once the kids go to school. Even then, I still have obligations. But anyway, that was not the best. Too much time in my own head during this training cycle. And this was born out of my own insecurities about the marathon. Understandably, because I've never run a marathon that went well. And even the ones that I did run were 10 years ago. Okay. So I was overthinking basically everything for this entire training cycle, which doesn't help anybody. It doesn't make your runs go better. Also, there are definitely, you know, best practices in training, and setting up your training schedule and your training schedule architecture and all of that. There are definitely best practices, but I think, you know, with a lot of this stuff, we can overthink it a lot because certain coaches will approach it certain ways and certain coaches will approach it other ways. And lots of people have success doing a variety of different ways. Okay. So overthinking it serves no useful purpose because there's a lot of ways to skin a cat here. You know, really getting in your own head about it, all it does is hurt you. And all it did was hurt me. I spent a lot of mental energy on it. And I'm not saying it hurt me on race day, but it was just not a great way of living your life, I guess. And, you know, spending so much time thinking about this sort of thing. Just let it happen, right? You have a good plan. You make certain decisions. And then you just go and you do it. And then, yeah, you might learn from certain experiences, but obsessing over every little detail and then constantly, you know, thinking about it and addressing it and, you know, all that rigmarole, it stinks. It's not fun and it doesn't help anything. So it's kind of like such a waste of time. Okay. During the race, I definitely felt embarrassed during the race. I did have a little bit of shame that I was walking, even though I knew that there were legitimate reasons why that was happening. It was weird. It was awkward to have people recognize me when I'm walking the marathon course. Now that might sound vain, and I did beat myself over that. So then it became like this awkward negative cycle of like feeling embarrassed and then feeling embarrassed that I felt embarrassed. And, but it happened, not a lot. So I think that was it was positive for me. It was like not seeing in the mental dip. I was able to course correct in that way. So that, I think that was good. But there were periods of time where that hit. The bigger thing was that when I finished that race, I had zero sense of satisfaction. None. I did not feel really any positive emotions about finishing the race. I didn't have a whole bunch of negative ones. Because I knew that I had, you know, for all the reasons I detailed earlier, in terms of the positives, like the effort, the nutrition, the grit, the not, you know, the not, you know, not getting into the, not staying in the mental dip, all of those things. I did recognize those positives in the moment. Those were not all things that I figured out later. But at the same time, I didn't have any positive feelings either. It was just kind of like, well, that's done. On to the next thing. And it wasn't a good experience for me in terms of like just getting like, wow, I did it. Amazing, right? Talked with Rachel Gersten about this in the last episode, and she really, really, really hit the point hard of you need to celebrate how you did does not matter in terms of your need to celebrate big accomplishments and achievements. I did not do that at all. I was 100% completely neutral after the fact. I went about my day and the flight home and then getting home and just kind of like basically treated it like a long run that I had completed. No sense of satisfaction whatsoever. And that kind of sucks, right? I had a lot of satisfaction over how the weekend went in terms of seeing people and the live shows, which were great. Obviously, everything podcast related to the trip to California, I absolutely celebrated that because it was all great. But I didn't celebrate the marathon at all. And that kind of sucked. And I definitely regret it. So what's next? Okay, what's next? This is fun. And this is really why I chose to do the marathon in the first place. This was never like, okay, I haven't done a marathon in a while. I want to do one and, you know, check it off my list or whatever. That's not what this was about. For me, this was about the first step, maybe even the introduction to a much larger and longer story. And that is, well, I want to be a marathoner in terms of that being something that I'm not constantly, but something that I think about and that I do regularly or semi-regularly. Okay. No more 10-year breaks. Okay. So this was about the experience, the training cycle, and, you know, getting out there and doing the marathon and getting that under my belt, getting that exposure, and then moving on to the next one. And that is exactly where I ended up. In fact, I haven't changed my thoughts on that at all. In fact, if anything, I've strengthened them after the fact, which is positive. So I will be doing a spring marathon, and I am super excited about training for that, to getting another 4 months or so of training and, more importantly, long runs in the mix, to go from not 6 2-hour long runs heading into the marathon and getting way, way, way more. Right, dozens and dozens of 2-hour runs over the course of a year, getting ready for a race. And that's exactly what I'm hoping to do. I'm not sure which race I'm going to do yet. Right now, it seems like my two finalists are the Providence Marathon here in Rhode Island, or the Eugene Marathon, which finishes at Hayward Field out in Oregon. They are the same weekend. So they are the weekend of May 1st. So that is really nice for me in terms of getting ready for that, right? So you got December, where you get the recovery period and you start to build back a little bit, get your body right, and then get a nice 4 months leading into that, coming off of a preceding marathon cycle. And I'm excited about that build. I'm really excited about doing this again. And my goal for that race isn't going to be a time goal. There are inclinations that I have long-term about big goals that I want to hit. But I'm going to save those for now. I'm going to hold on. I'm going to keep those tight. But none of those are related to the next marathon. Okay, the next marathon is really simple. I want to run my marathon pace, whatever that ends up being, for the whole race. Okay, that is the marathon goal for the spring. That work hard, get fit, get strong, whatever the marathon pace happens to be going into that race. And let's hope it's the fastest possible marathon pace I can get 5 months from now, but being able to hold it the whole race. Okay. That's going to be the next step, right? We saw this race. I was unable to do that no matter what pace I ran the first 16 miles. The last 6 miles were probably going to be exactly what they were, no matter what pace I chose, just because of my lack of strength. Okay. That was just a product of the circumstance. That was not a personal failing. Okay. So next race, I will be much more prepared, much more ready, and that's what I want to do. Marathon pace, the whole way. And I am really excited to do just that. So if you have any suggestions about which race you think I should do, whether that's Eugene or Providence, or maybe there's a different race that you think I should do that you think might fit in well, you've heard how I've talked about the marathon, both pre and post race. You know as much about my decision as I do at this point. I'm putting it all out there. Let me know. We'll see how things come together. But I am really excited. I will say what I will not be doing is that I won't be going to Grandma's. I don't want to do a June race, in part because if I decide to do CIM next year or a different fall marathon, I don't want the June turnaround. I just don't. I think it's going to be too quick. I want to have a little bit more time than that. So I do want it to be a spring race. That's what I do know for sure. So with all that being said, thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. And thank you for requesting these kinds of episodes. I never quite know, or I usually get in my head about, whether people actually want to hear this stuff. Do they just want to hear me do these feature stories and interviews, which are really exciting, so much fun to do, and really just, you know, engaging for me personally. I love those conversations, and we'll do more of those as we progress. But it was interesting to see so many people reach out and say, hey, we want to hear about your training. And hopefully I'm able to provide you not only with details of it, but actionable steps that don't just affect me, but maybe potentially also affect you as well. So thank you so much for listening, and happy running. This has been a production of Rambling Runner Podcast. This podcast is produced by David Margetti of In Post Media. Thank you to Meta P for the music. His song, Righteous Path, featuring Rex Mayhem and Chip Fu, is produced by Symphonic Bang. Yeah. Enterprising in my surroundings, I'm finding the quietest estates these days. Just representation of storm brewing, amazed that the focus remains the vocal focal point of my change. I'm trying to show this industry I got.